Bevor es mit der Folge heute losgeht, ein kleiner Hinweis. Wir haben eine Crowdfunding-Kampagne gestartet auf der Webseite patreon.com/insertmoin. Da könnt ihr unseren Podcast unterstützen und dieses Projekt finanziell supporten. Wir würden uns freuen, wenn ihr da mal vorbeischaut auf patreon.com/insertmoin. Dankeschön und nun viel Spaß mit der Folge. Wunderschönen guten Morgen. Ihr hört Insert Moin Le Brunch. Ich bin der Manuel. Ich habe heute einen Gast, der aber jetzt nicht direkt im Skype zugeschaltet ist, sondern den ich besucht habe. Wir waren nämlich eingeladen zu CD Projekt und GOG nach Warschau. Dort sitzen die alle gemeinsam in einem Büro. Das hat einen ganz einfachen Grund. Der CEO, also der Chef beider dieser eigenständigen Firmen, ist Marcin Iwinski, der Gründer von CD Projekt und eben auch gleichzeitig CEO von GOG.com. Und der Grund der Einladung war nicht nur, dass wir die neueste Witcher 3-Version ausgiebig testen und anspielen durften, sondern GOG startet auch in Deutschland. Das war Grund genug für einen Studiobesuch. Der Einladung sind wir natürlich gefolgt und haben die Gelegenheit beim Schopfe gepackt und haben ein kleines Interview mit Marcin Iwinski geführt. Ein sehr, 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 sehr netter Zeitgenosse. Ich ärgere mich ein bisschen, ich hätte mit der Frage einsteigen sollen. Marcin, are you a pathological nice guy? Habe ich leider vergessen, ist mir erst danach eingefallen. Aber denkt euch diese Frage, wenn es gleich losgeht. Reden ein bisschen über die Gründung von CD Projekt, die Besonderheiten des polnischen Spielemarkts, vor allem in den 80er und 90er Jahren, wie er mit Baldur's Gate den Grundstein seines Erfolgs legte und vieles, vieles mehr. Und jetzt viel Spaß mit dem Interview mit Marcin Iwinski. Maybe you should introduce yourself to our listeners first.
Okay, I'm Marcin Iwinski. I'm the co-founder and joint CEO of CD Projekt, as you properly pronounce it, in Polish, or the more international version, CD Projekt.
And you told us that you started the company with selling boxed versions of games, right?
Yes, I mean, I started right out of high school with a friend. And during high school, we were sitting in one school bench and skipping classes at the same time to play games. Michał was also selling software on the local computer market, while I had, I wasn't aware of it at that time, but I was building a big international network. I was on the bulletin board system scene, then I got some friends, and then they sent me the first CD-ROMs. I bought my first CD-ROM reader, which happened to be one of the first in Poland, probably. And when we started playing the games on CD-ROMs, we just saw, wow, it's such a cool thing. Let's try to sell some, because they were not available. So we started selling, Michał started selling them on the games market, and very fast realized, wow, not only we have access to new games, we can play the old latest news, but also we can make some money, I don't know, to upgrade our computers. That was the main motivation back in the day, or to party over the weekends.
So your real motivation was to get the games first, right?
Actually, yes. It was funny. It was like this for years, and still sometimes, you know, I cannot get rid of it when I go to a trade show, and I mean, we're right now a bigger company. We are invited to exclusive presentations, and I'm like, wow, I'll play the game first. I'll see the game first. It's kind of childish, but it is there in me. So after 3 months of this sort of experimenting, importing a few units here and there, we thought, okay, we think it's a good start of business. We'll be importing games and CD-ROMs. We have the name for the company, CD Projekt. So right now, why it's CD. And then people were asking us afterwards if we'd like to change it to DVD Projekt or Blu-ray Projekt, but no, it's CD Projekt. And of course, you know, as being gamers, our dream was always to make our own game. But initially, we thought, okay, God, we had no money. I think our starting capital was like $2,000 tops, and a computer, an old PC, household PC. I said, okay, we'll first build the company, we'll see what's happening, and maybe at a certain point when we'll have money, we'll do games. And this happens. Actually, we founded CD Projekt as the local distribution in '94. And in 2002, we started CD Projekt Red Studio. So it has taken us quite a few years to gather the capital and the size. Mm.
But it was always your idea to make games.
Yes,
someday?
Yes, we wanted to do games, but initially it was like, hey, we don't know how to do it, we have no money, so first let's try to start small with the games. And it was never, you know, when we started things, it was never, and I think that's the case with a lot of people. Because other people who don't do business, they think, wow, when they started, I don't know, Apple, Hewlett Packard, they were thinking that in 20 years there will be, no, man. They were thinking how to survive the next month, yeah, or how to have fun or how to do something new and fresh. And then these things were just clicking. And that's exactly the same with us. So initially we're importing 2 units of games. I still remember we're importing Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis or Outpost or King's Quest. And we had 5 units. And then one game, somebody in the US convinced me to take 40 units, and we had overstocks for like 3 months. We couldn't get rid of, you know, the 35 units left. And so that's the story of the early beginnings.
It was the mid-90s, right?
94, precisely, yeah.
That was like the high point on piracy, and even in Germany as well.
Yeah.
How did you came up with an idea that it's a good idea to sell copies of games that everybody has... free of range?
I would say initially the CD-ROM as a form of a media was a way of a protection, because there were no pressing plans. It was like a new expensive technology, nothing like that. I mean, I still remember a single speed home burner back there in the US, it was $5,000, and the clean CDs were like, what, 50? So the whole operation would make sense. Only afterwards, what the tech got really massive, people started copying. But then, I mean, initially it was a high value to buy a CD-ROM. We are selling very few units, so it was a niche market, high margins, great. But, I mean, like, looking from a business perspective, great. The problem started when it started expanding, because you have no Polish versions, nothing was localized. Units are still relatively small, maybe a couple hundred units. It makes no sense to localize, because you will for sure lose money on it. That was the common thinking back in the day in the market. So people pirate, and then, you know, you have a typical vicious circle.
Yeah.
It makes no sense, so it makes no sense, so it makes no sense, and it stays like this. But we really always wanted to experiment to do new things, and, you know, realizing that, hey, for example, we were looking at German market, in Germany, more and more games is localized, they're selling, the market is growing. So, okay, we started first with adventure games. We licensed all the titles. I assume it was Pink Panther from MGM and Ace Ventura from 7th Level, actually a German company.
Yeah.
And we fully localized them. We used famous actors.
In Polish.
In Polish. Mm-hmm. And because the games were older, we released them at a very good price point. And suddenly the market goes kaboom.
Mm-hmm.
We sold, 5,000-7,000 units, while before we were selling 300.
Okay.
And people say like, wow, we kind of, if it's a game is in Polish, the famous actors, I'll buy. And then
did you do it yourself, or did you hire translators?
We actually were. I was looking after the localization. My friend was working with the studio, so it was like a partly self-done thing. And we're doing most of the things with our distribution ourselves, including initially even delivering to stores ourselves. And then obviously as the market was developing, there were specialized companies, but in 94 there was not even one courier company in Poland. If you wanted to send a package, you had to go to a train station, to cargo, put it on the cargo, they put it on the train, and the other guy, your customer, had to pick it up at the cargo wherever, in Gdańsk or in Poznań. It sounds a little ridiculous today, but that's how it was. The biggest game changer really for the market was but it was still kind of small, so people saw it selling, but it wasn't an overwhelming trend. The new games were still not localized. And then, because we are distributing Interplay, back in the day, English versions only, we're localizing box and docs, as we used to say, we saw Baldur's Gate, we saw it at one of the shows, and it was looking just amazing, and the dream was if we could localize it.
Mm-hmm. Baldur's Gate.
No, Baldur's Gate, yes. But, you know, 1,500 pages of text, huge game, and so on and on. And we came up with a proposal to them. We started negotiating. We said, okay, guys, if you take all the risk, we showed them how the adventure games worked. If you take all the risks, we can grant you the right. It's a license. You'll have to pay us for 3,000 units at 6 or 7 pounds or something. But you have to do everything yourself, the implementation, the translation. We'll get no support because this deal is not big enough. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't work, it's your risk. And for us, the risk was so big that if we wouldn't make it, we managed to release it, we could face a very challenging time at the company. We started doing this. I was supervising the translators. Assuming we had 10 translators and probably two of them were totally not delivering. My father, a documentary movie producer, he helped me with the cast. So he knew the studios. He knew the actors. We took really five famous Polish actors, but like the old school theater actors, the known voices, the institutions.
Yeah.
It took us 6 months. And at the time, a very good game was selling 1,000 units. On the day one, we sold 18,000 units. 18. And nobody could believe it, including Interplay.
Yeah.
And, you know, 6 months back, we're trembling if we managed to sell three or maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
There was no retail chain, even one. So it all went to wholesale to small stores. Within the next year, we sold 50,000 in total.
So you were the main source for Baldur's Gate. Yeah. Everybody who played Baldur's Gate had your work.
Yeah, actually. And first and foremost, everybody who wanted to play this game bought it legally. Because it was a thick, beef-up edition. We added a D&D book. It was on 5 CDs, and pirates were changing my CD. So it was a super buffering, because the pirate version was just expensive. We added a sealed map on sort of like a fake parchment. We added thick manual. So generally, it was like a collector's item. We were sitting in this room and you see the Witcher games, and for example, you see Mass Effect Collector's Edition. This was this kind of beefy, bulky, heavy thing, which was worth your money.
Yeah.
And it opened the market.
Yeah.
So suddenly people realized, wow, well, there's 38 million Polish speakers and they want to play Polish games. Games in Polish, that's amazing, you know, let's try to turn it into a business trend. But it really all started with passion.
Mm.
And then, you know, all these lessons with the piracy, with how to treat customers, that really value drives the purchasing, the decision, and not, I don't know, forcing people into that.
Yeah.
We translated then into the Witcher and GOG.com.
So the values your company has, like now today with GOG and stuff, like be nice to the gamers.
We said gamers come first.
Yeah.
Gamers come first, and we very well define and very strictly define what we are doing. So with GOG, it's simple. It's a DRM free platform where gamers come first, and it's handpicked, it's boutique, and we take full responsibility for the games we have on the platform. So if something doesn't work, we're responsible for that, and we are there either to fix it or refund the money. With such a concept, I think it removes all the fears from buying games. And starting with the classics and bringing back the classics, dusting them off, making sure them work, I think we created a lot of goodwill among people. And right now they keep on recommending GOG to their friends.
Yeah. You know, like GOG has like the image of the good guy in the games community.
Yeah.
I was wondering, can you be that nice to the gamers because of the success of the Witcher games? Or
no,
GOG as its own company, like... Even if like Witcher didn't happen and like the huge success
story. GOG is a different company. It's a separate company.
Of course. But you know what I mean? Like are you able to be that nice because you're like, well,
yes, of
you
course.
Have a success.
Yes, of course. I mean, don't forget that GOG started without the Witcher. We didn't have Witcher. And actually, the Witcher 1, we didn't have the digital rights for quite some time because although we managed to keep the, and I was signing the deal, to keep the IP and everything, because we self-finance 80% of the game. Back in the day, we didn't even think about digital distribution. So we didn't keep these rights. We got them back after a certain time. But until The Witcher 2, pretty much, GOG didn't have any ties with Red. Of course, the same people. I'm running both companies.
Yeah.
But still there was no content exchange. So GOG has grown on its own just purely on the values and the concept.
Okay.
And then the service, of course.
Yeah. Like you started as like Good Old Games with GOG, and like the title, the subtitle is gone now, because like
it's almost still in people's heads.
Because almost every good game, good old game, is already on the platform, and it feels like you're trying to step to the next level with GOG. Do you see yourself as some sort of like curator for games, like for the game's history, like? Even though the games aren't in boxed versions anymore, but you still try to give the feeling of we care for the games and we want them to be able to run the games even 20, 30 years
ago. I think what we do, and like first talking about the all the stuff, when people are buying the game, in our model, we are responsible for it. So we take the commitment that it works. We are just not a storefront. And that's the predominant model in the retail. People selling other people's stuff, and then you go, and if there's a problem with it, usually they'll send you to the other people, like you bought the TV, and they send you, I don't know, to Samsung or something, and say, hey, there's a warranty center, and the warranty center will be a tired guy, like, holy shit, we have a problem with the series, and it takes 2 months to get the parts or something, yeah? Here, because we are responsible, we are obliged to make it work, so it is also motivating us, but I think this is very much the right approach. We should sell the stuff that works. And if it doesn't, we should help to resolve the problem, give the money back or exchange for another game. With the new games, to a certain extent, it's easier because they work now. However, having said that, in future, if they will need certain...
You still feel responsible like for upgrade, we these new games are be yes. able to run
because,
them in
because
20 years.
New games, will be classics,
yeah, exactly.
You know, in 5 years or something, if they're good enough. Because, but we are trying really to set the quality bar relatively high. And if you look at it, when we started the company in '94, we were selling games which are new, like Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis or whatever, Star Wars. And right now we have this Star Wars as an oldie, as a classic, and we had to make sure it works. Yeah. So I think it ties to one to another.
The switch from selling games to making games. What was the hardest challenge, and how did that transfer happen?
So from Teleprojekt, the Polish and the Eastern European distribution to Teleprojekt Red. The hardest challenge. How the hell do you make games, man?
Yeah.
That's the hardest challenge. How do you produce games? How do you market games, and how do you sell games on a worldwide scale? So and don't forget that Witcher 1 released in 2007, so practically no distribution, digital distribution whatsoever, very very brick and mortar world, with publishers being the gatekeepers. But first making the game. I think out of the 5 years on Witcher 1, probably 2 years is the time for learning. Any basic thing, like, you know, that you have to have very strong production or producers all across the company, that you have a keep an extremely strong grip on what you are doing every single day, and we are learning it the hard way. So that's the most challenging part, because I think, in contrary to a lot of the other developers who know how to make games, or they were making games or taking or participating in the process, we didn't have this experience, but we knew how to run companies and how to do business. And I think that was a huge advantage, and we learned how to make games and of course improved our business skills. But we can talk about these values here today. We can say that Witcher 3 is DRM free, and we can commit to that. We can give stuff to gamers for free, like the 16 DLCs for the Wild Hunt, because we maintain our independence. If we wouldn't have this business knowledge and experience from the distribution business, it's very likely you wouldn't be sitting here today.
Yeah, and it's a lot easier to start like a game company if you like already have a successful other company, right?
Yeah,
like,
of course,
to get, I mean, to feel secure, and
you are secure. You have a lot of connections in the industry.
Yeah.
You are not a noob coming to the table. People treat you way more seriously. Besides, you know, we're maybe never real masters in the distribution services. I'm talking about logistics, and because normally distribution companies, when you think of a distribution company, you're like, oh, they probably have a big warehouse and they know every single thing. No, that was never our strength. Our strength was to know which games are selling, why they're selling, what gamers are after. And I think that was essential when we were developing The Witcher 1, because we are not developing an artificial concept of an RPG game. We were really developing an RPG that gamers will want to play, and we as gamers want to play as well, because I think the personal motivation was always extremely important. We feel very attached to what we're doing and passionate. But the whole business stuff, the entrepreneurial stuff was extremely helpful, because then when you face a problem, you really try to find solution outside of the box. I think also because we are kids of the transition period between the systems, we're always looking for clever ways of doing things. Sometimes shortcuts, sometimes something totally crazy out of the box, outside of the box. And with games development, it definitely helps, because nothing is set in stone. You can do anything you want. I think the proof is all this, I don't know, Twitter's, Facebook's, and whatnot, guys who are just one guy and suddenly they rule the world.
Yeah. Great. Final question, GOG or GOG, what do you prefer?
Yeah.
GOG starts in Germany now with its own, what do you call it, storefront or something?
Yeah, German language version.
In a globalized world, like an international world, why the need for like an extra German version of a website that's
I think has been reachable
for Germans like for years now?
I think there is a good question within your question. So what a globalized world is. I'm really laughing when people are saying, yeah, I'm global. What means I'm in English? So a lot of people in many countries will not understand one word of what you're saying. Mm. And actually, my passion is foreign languages, so it's very close to my heart. And whenever we can, we'll try to talk to people in their mother tongue, because that's how you build the relation. Witcher 3 has 15 language versions. Mm. And probably that's the highest number of language versions for an RPG game. With GOG, we are following the same thinking. I mean, we want to be in touch with the German gamers. And of course, already on the platform, we have over 10% of our community are people from Germany, Switzerland, and Austria. So that's a very big group. It's the second biggest group after the English speakers. But these people are the German users who feel fluent in German. Mm. Where is the rest? Probably not on GOG.com, because they wouldn't understand much. So we welcome them with open arms and encourage them to try a proper German service on GOG from this Thursday onwards.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Thanks for your time.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Good luck with the game.
Yeah.
Witcher 3.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Bye.